Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello, and welcome to the Tracy Sandler Show. I am your host, Tracy Sandler. I am very excited to welcome back, and get ready, Joe, because we're big into intros on this podcast, the very talented, very smart, very handsome, very funny, excellent editor, the most knowledgeable about college football, despite some of the not nice things he said about J.J. McCarthy on the last time he was on this podcast.
Oh, there we are.
Hosted the first team and the Ruffino and Joe show on the Believe Network with so many things, but I just felt they were all important to say. Joe DeLeon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. That was a much more excited introduction than the last time. I know you maybe were a little sick last time we did the show, but that I'm all juiced up. I was a little tired coming into the show, but I'm all excited now. I'm ready to talk Niners draft. I'm ready to try to be positive about J.J. McCarthy. Let's see if we can do it.
Well, I will tell you that we had someone on the show before the Ohio State game who made a comment about Michigan covering up for the deficiencies in J.J. McCarthy, to which my response was, oh, I'm going to need you to apologize. And it was it was just my natural response. And I almost shut down the podcast at that point. I kept going because I'm a professional, but
it wasn't me who said that.
I thought it was Colton Denning who came on for Ohio State. I don't think you said deficiencies in J.J. McCarthy.
Okay. I might have spun it a little more positively because I didn't want to be mean, but...
Yes, because this was an Ohio State person who I really like outside of the fact that he's a big Ohio State fan. But I think that was him who said that. You had other things to say that, I'll be honest, I didn't love. But but you were also, though, very positive about the sign-stealing situation.
Yes.
And how the other Big Ten coaches were perhaps whining. And that's my nicest way I'm going to put it.
It feels like years ago when all that happened. And it's crazy that we've come this far. I know that we're going to get into JJ, but
of course.
I'm still shocked that he declared. I still am kind of trying to wrap my head around that at that time that we talked last and we talked about the sign stealing scandal, I wouldn't have even have guessed that he would have declared for the draft.
The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. It was definitely not you who said it because it was right after the sign stealing scandal stuff happened. And this was the Ohio State preview. So you didn't say deficiencies, and nor will you today if you want to, if you don't.
I can't promise that. I definitely can't promise that, Tracy.
Shut this thing right down. Nor will you today. But yeah, it's so crazy. Though I do feel once they won the national championship and Harbaugh was leaving, like what, there was no upside to him staying, even though I actually do think it would have been great for him to have another year. But I think once that happened, it could only go downhill from there. So I felt like that was probably the right choice. But we'll talk Niners draft first, because they are, much to my sadness and chagrin, not going to draft JJ McCarthy, which is no disrespect to Brock Purdy and all the respect to JJ McCarthy.
You never know. Maybe you can make a pitch. It's always certainly possible. Obviously, that's not going to happen, though.
No, if I'm pitching, I'm pitching Mikey Samrasil. That's my draft. Last year, I kept manifesting Jake Moody, and it worked. So I'm just going to keep throwing out Mikey Samrasil because they could use a good nickel. But I think they have other issues. Well, I mean, not him specifically, but corner is an issue. That CB3 issue, so that's certainly one to talk about. But maybe we start with the 31st pick. Should they stay there at 31? I think there's a thought around the world, the NFL world, they will pick an offensive lineman. There are also people who think they would pick a defensive tackle. A couple people have mocked Chris Jenkins to them, so I wouldn't hate that. But I would love your thoughts. I have a couple linemen that seem interesting to me, but I would love your thoughts first.
Yeah, I think that you brought up this trade back conversation, and I think that is the biggest one to have early on for the 49ers draft needs in the first round. I look at the fact that they're in this position where they've got a couple of holes where they don't necessarily need superstars. They just need quality starters. And this is one of those drafts where there's a lot of talent in the second and third round. And there's really not going to be much of a gap between somebody that they take in the second round, middle of the second round, wherever it might be, and who they take at pick 31. So I'm going to be of the argument here with the amount of depth on day two that they should trade back, see how many picks that they could really build up, try to position it so that you're getting picks in this draft. You're not doing it for next year's draft, which is already getting some pretty negative reviews from some people that I've talked to, not nearly as talented as this one. But I really think that it's a smart decision because you're not really missing out on much. If you move out of the 31 spot, you're really not going to miss out on an opportunity to still get good starters. And we're going to talk about a little bit more. There's just so many opportunities to fix, or not fix, but just to add guys that are high floor players that are going to improve the quality of the defense, which I think is a big question. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the interior of the offensive line. Them trading back is going to only set them up for success in 2024.
So let's pretend for a second they do trade back. What do you think their priority is? Is it the same as it is at 31? Or if you trade back now, is it like, well, in all seriousness, my bias aside, you say, well, if we trade back and we move up quite a bit in the second round, we can get Mike Samrasil, and he is the best nickel in the draft. And then we leave Lenore on the outside. I mean, I don't think it's just me saying that. I saw that smile, but I don't think I'm the only one saying that.
Well, so I like Samrasil, and I think that there's a couple other nickel guys that I would have ahead of him.
Have a great night.
This is going to help your case.
Okay.
That he probably would still be there in the third round. And if they pick up a couple extra picks, that they could still pull out with him. I think he's a great football player. I think his testing was, he's shown up with some pretty good athletic testing for what he is as a player. I just think there might be a couple guys that would take ahead of him. So they still realistically wouldn't miss out. But to answer your question of if you do trade back when that first pick in the second round, wherever it might be, maybe you luck out and you have an early second rounder, I would prioritize interior offensive line. I think that right now I look at the guard spots right now for the 49ers, and I'm not in love with the situation that they currently have. It was clearly the biggest deficiency for them on offense, and for how much they run the football, they're going to need to fix that. They're going to need to shore up those either of those spots. So I look at the fact that this guard class, it's not bad, but it's not great. Somebody like Christian Haynes is somebody who immediately pops in my head, who would be a fantastic pick, the guard out of UConn, that they could take in the middle or the end of the second round that could still be on the board for them.
The other position on the line that I think they have to start planning for, and I definitely mentioned this on this pod before, is they got to start planning for Trent Williams not to be there anymore. So I think they potentially take a tackle that they can upgrade on the Colt McKivitt side of the line, but that potentially down the road could be a replacement for Trent Williams as well.
Yeah, I've also thought about this, and you know, a couple times where I've done, I want to say, 4 mock drafts so far, and it's really crossed my mind what you just brought up there, where it's not really something that's even been talked about, that Trent Williams is in his mid-30s, and as good of an offensive lineman he is, we see with Tyron Smith how much he's, I don't want to say fallen off a cliff, but he has really regressed. His health and availability has really gone down. It's just something that naturally happens for an offensive lineman. No matter how freakishly athletic these guys are, the wear and tear is going to get to you. So there could be this investment of going after a Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, a Kingsley Soamataea from BYU. I think there's some nice options on day 2 of some developmental guys. Patrick Paul from Houston is another player who I think could be available in the 3rd round. For the 49ers, I think that is a really good angle for them. And actually, I'll throw in one more guy that could fit both of these needs of a guard and then eventually maybe playing tackle is Jordan Morgan from Arizona. If he slides out of the 1st round, he's still on the board. He played tackle at Arizona. I don't think that he's got the foot speed to play in space that well, but maybe he has a strong start to his career and things go well early on with the Niners, and then eventually you just bump him out because he's got the physical profile necessary to maybe play tackle. So those are some guys that I think that are worth considering if they're trying to just work on the depth or just the starting quality positions for the offensive line.
And I think Jordan Morgan was somebody that I had written down. And I think one of the benefits that San Francisco does have is they need to address it. But the line was not terrible. You know, they're not in desperate need. They need to upgrade it. Of that, there's no doubt. But they could potentially bring in a Jordan Morgan and see how he does and develop him and maybe develop him quickly. And I find an X factor for them, both on the offensive line and the defensive line, is their coaching. So Chris Foerster is a fantastic offensive line coach who's done a really good job with what he's had and has been able to develop some guys. And on the defensive line, obviously, Chris Kocurek is well-known and infamous for what he's been able to do. So I do think in the draft, and I could be wrong about this because I don't actually draft the players. It must be like a full Michigan team. But I do think there's something to be said if there's a player you like, they like, and say, well, I don't know that he's a day one starter, but I do think under each Chris, he can really develop. I think that helps them too, especially as you say, they get into day 2 and day 3.
Yeah. And I also, you know, we've kind of hinted at this there after they move on from kind of figuring out what they're doing in offensive line. I really think that they need to figure out what's going on at defensive tackle. You know, you're moving on from Kinlaw and he's now a New York Jet. And I'm sure that things could go well reuniting him with Robert Saleh, but you've got to find somebody, I think, on day 2. Luckily for the 49ers, this is a really deep and talented defensive tackle class. And I think more importantly, it's a very unique class in the sense that there's a lot of different guys that could do a lot of different things. So I like the idea of a Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State. I know that might be a little sacrilegious to bring him up to you and sell him to you. But
Bosa, I mean, I have to get what I might.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the dividends that have been paid by Nick Bosa and how impactful he's been. But Michael Hall Jr. for me is somebody who's just so disruptive, low to the ground. You brought up Chris Jenkins. I really like that idea. And he's somebody who I was very high on in this defensive tackle class. He's super physical. He's got the big body frame. And I think that he checks every. I really like McKinley Jackson from Texas A&M. I think he's going to be available on day 2. His testing rate, which I think maybe a little bit, but he was still my 2nd defensive tackle in this class. And he is just such a quick first step, super, super disruptive. And there's going to be a lot of options for the 49ers if they're going to be trying to tackle this defensive tackle spot.
Well, it's interesting. Their needs, this is a good draft for their needs. Like they're relatively deep for what they're looking for. So as long as we're talking defense, let's talk that corner position. Obviously, we talked about San Francisco, but who are the guys that you would potentially take ahead? And they're in a unique position there too, because they have Diamador Lenore, who he and Tre'Varius Ward have been so incredible on the outside, but Lenore could move in. He's also an incredible nickel. So they could go a couple directions. They could get a true nickel so that they can leave Lenore on the outside and not have to think about it. Or they can take an outside corner knowing they can move Lenore. And they signed Isaac Yiodom in free agency and they like him. I mean, they really do like him. And I think they see him as a potential starter. But you've got some good corners in this draft. And I think they'd be remiss not to take one of them.
Yeah, the guys that really stand out to me that I think fit that nickel slot DB slash corner role, the two that I love the most that would fit somewhere on day two or early in this draft, ahead of Sanders still, I really love Kalen Carson. He came on our show. He's a really bright young man from Wake Forest. He is so disruptive at the catch point. Despite him not being a very big corner, he still finds ways to go up, attack the football in the air. His game against Florida State when he went against Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman was fantastic. I encourage anybody who wants to dig a little bit deeper on Kalen Carson to go watch that game. I also really like Javon Bullard from Georgia. And I think that it's so easy to sell a Georgia defensive back because you know with Kirby Smart that you're going to get a really well-coached young man and a very smart individual. He has contributed very, very early at Georgia and he's played a ton of snaps. The big thing that is constantly overlooked with slot corners that I think a lot of people don't talk about is they need to be good tacklers. They need to be capable and willing to get their nose dirty because they're playing near the line of scrimmage. They're playing near the box. And that sometimes if there's an outside run, they need to come down and make a play. And Javon Bullard's one of those guys that's just a really, really strong tackler and could be impactful that way. Now, if we're discussing some of these outside guys that could be still on the board, I like Cam Hart from Notre Dame. I know another guy from a school that Michigan fans don't like. I'm really killing it here.
I mean, Notre Dame is a lot easier to swallow than Ohio State. But right. I will say this. At this point, I'm now thinking of who's good at predictable picks. That's my focus in this draft. I'm understanding it's maybe not theirs. And some of these guys are great because the opposing guys will participate. So if I had a Notre Dame, but if Michigan was playing Notre Dame or if Michigan's playing Ohio State, then it's great content. So at that point, that's really my biggest concern at this point.
Well, that's a great way to spin picking from rival teams. But I do really like Cam Hart. He's 6'3". He ran in the 4.5s. His length is tremendous. A little bit more zone based, but him and TJ Tampa kind of similar profiles where they're really long but really explosive for their size. I also am a huge fan. Somewhere on, in the third round, maybe in the beginning of the fourth round, DJ James from Auburn, super lean. I think he was like 165 this year. He might be like maybe 180 pounds right now, but he is really fluid. The game that he had against LSU, which faced off against Blake Neighbors, he faced off against Brian Thomas Jr. He had a number of reps that are just unbelievable, the way that he's able to flip his hips, just transition, lose no speed. I think that if there's like a steal in this corner class, it could be DJ James, but those are some of the guys that I really like in this position for the 49ers to pay attention to.
And we'll move to a position, watch this segue. We'll move to a position these corners have had to go up against. And let's talk wide receiver. I'm going to assume that the 49ers and Brandon Ayuk are going to figure it out. I feel pretty confident they're going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And if they don't figure it out, they're going to trade Brandon Ayuk and get a hell of a ton of picks in the draft. So there's that. But I do think that they're going to figure it out. That being said, next season, Juwan Jennings will be an unrestricted free agent. Debo Samuel, there is a clause in that contract that if they decide it's too much to bear for next year, they could make a change. I'm not saying they're going to. Everybody relax. I'm just saying these are the realities of their situation. So this is also a deep wide receiver draft, and it's a position they need to draft, kind of like corners. They always should be drafting wide receivers every year. So who are some of your favorites that maybe aren't the most obvious? The ones that maybe you would consider, much like you said, DJ James is a steal. Who you would potentially consider a steal in this draft?
Yeah, I think that the 49ers are very not specific because I'm trying to think of the way that they've gone after getting receivers. They're always typically guys that are really productive after the catch. All these guys that they've found and they've turned into super productive players, like Ayuk, you mentioned, Debo Samuel's been productive because he's tremendous after the catch. So like that's where I focus on, or maybe not these bigger body guys, but guys that are going to be impactful after they have the football in their hands. And immediately I think of Ricky Pearsall from Florida, who is a little more compact, very, very shifty. He's somebody who could be a real killer in the slot. And then Ladd McConkey from Georgia, I think might go really early and might be kind of hard to tag down because I don't think that receiver is going to be such a priority for the 49ers that they would be able to go after a guy like Ladd McConkey. But Troy Franklin from Oregon is somebody who really thrived this past year for the Oregon Ducks, where he caught a lot of quick, short routes, and he was able to take them to the house and pick up huge gains. When he's given space, he was able to kill, you know, and take up all that space and be very productive there. I also like the idea of Devontae Walker from North Carolina, who was Drake May's go-to target, tall, long receiver, very explosive linearly. As soon as he came back midway through the season after he dealt with his NCAA, the stuff that he was dealing with, his eligibility. Okay. As soon as he came back, he was super productive for UNC. And then one more guy I throw out there, Xavier Leggett, kind of reminds me, makes me think of somebody who could work well within this 49ers offense, who's big body guy, very physical in his play style, but he ran in the 4.3s despite having this massive frame for how big he is. So those are some guys that kind of come to mind, I think would work well with the 49ers.
Counterpoint, I don't know if counterpoint's the right term, but they really haven't had a speedster. Would it behoove them to have a speedster? Is that, they tried it, they've tried it, it hasn't necessarily worked out, but would it behoove them to have a speedster?
I think so. And I'm always of the belief that when you're building a wide receiver room, that you need to have unique body types, unique skill sets, guys that are going to be able to attack in different ways. And I mean, the obvious one that immediately comes to mind that could be available in different rounds, depending on how excited the NFL gets over the 40 time that he ran. But I'm referring to Xavier Worthy from Texas. He broke the 40 time record. He is ridiculously fast. I would pull the trigger on him if I'm the 49ers. I know how creative Kyle Shanahan is, and that if he's able to unlock a guy like that, I would be frightened as all hell if I'm a team that has to face the 49ers if they ended up with Xavier Worthy.
I agree with you. I think it would behoove them to try again and this time perhaps be successful. This is an interesting draft for San Francisco because it's their first one in the Lynch Shanahan era without Adam Peters. And I don't think that fans really necessarily, and why would they? Because it's not the person they think about all the time, but maybe necessarily really, I don't want to say the word understand because I'm not downplaying that, but he's been a huge part of their draft. And some of these later round successes have been because of Adam Peters and what he's done. So this becomes an interesting draft for the 49ers, who have not always done great with the higher round picks, but can they do better there? Can they still hit on some of these later round guys without Adam Peters? And he left San Francisco, early January. So he was probably already starting to look. I mean, I know he was starting to look at guys, for San Francisco. Now he's the GM of the Commanders. So that to me makes this draft somewhat interesting just from the in the weeds front office part of it.
And Peters was so highly lauded, as you're talking about here. He's one of those guys where if you're not like really paying attention closely to some of these front offices and you're talking about the impact that he had, you wouldn't even know who he is. But that's a really great point that goes unrecognized often. And I think you look at a lot of different teams that have had really good front offices that have lost guys that have gone to take other jobs. Like I immediately think of the Buffalo Bills and Joe Shane leaving. And it's not that the Bills haven't had good drafts since he left and went to the Giants, but you have noticed that there's maybe been a little bit of a difference in maybe some of the quality of some of the guys that they've got. They haven't had the same level of immediate impact from some of the players that they've drafted that they did have when Joe Shane was there. I'm not saying that he was the missing piece, but it kind of goes in line with what you're talking about, where be prepared to not be disappointed, but be prepared for maybe things to not go the way that you always would expect, because, you lose out a guy like that who was doing so much behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes. I'm curious to see the philosophy changes a little bit. It'll just be kind of interesting to see. And also be interesting to see post this Super Bowl loss, which was an emotional loss for them and very difficult. What does that do in a draft process? I'm not making any major statements here. I just think it's kind of, interesting to see. And we saw in free agency, obviously, they let Eric Armstead go, and it, understandable on all sides. I think on the aggregate, they made the defensive line better, but we're seeing them starting to make those decisions, those football decisions you have to make. And we'll be kind of just interesting to see what happens in this draft. So here's a question before we kind of move off the 49ers for a little while. Okay. If you're San Francisco, and I think I know the answer to this based on the beginning of our conversation, but if you're San Francisco, Are you 100% not picking at 31 and trading back much earlier in the second round?
If I'm San Francisco, yeah, I'm absolutely trading back. And it's what you just led in and said right there is you're coming off of losing in the Super Bowl. The previous year, you came a game short of that. So you're inching closer and closer. Mm-hmm. And you're also not able to retain some of the top guys that, you know, that we've talked about here. And you're kind of reshuffling parts of the roster. They're not a team that is in a position to be drafting guys that are projects that are going to take a couple of years. The window to win is right now. And it can be extended further than that. But when you keep getting close, you don't want to be one of those teams that gets as far as they're going to get and doesn't get over the hump. And I think that the way that you accomplish this is by drafting guys that are more high floor, by drafting more guys in those middle rounds as possible, and having so many of those picks where you can fill those needs with quality football players, as I said at the beginning of this show when we were talking earlier. I would much rather invest, especially with how bad the day three picks are going to be. I think like after round five, it really, really gets thin. There's going to be a lot of dudes who would normally be PFAs, UDFAs that are going to get drafted. There's going to be some really weird ones this year. I would prioritize really digging in on day two and see what you could come out with. And if you could get 2-3 starters out of that, that's a home run to me. And I think that that better positions you to go and finally win a Super Bowl and finally complete the mission. And that would set them up the best rather than sticking in the pick. And I also would add in here, if they do trade out, I think it's very likely it's with a team that's trying to go and get a quarterback that wants to get the guy, whoever it's Michael Penix, Bo Nix on that 5th-year option. So you could realistically not fleece, but maybe pull out a really good deal where you get a lot of quality picks to help set you up to succeed in this draft.
And I think one other thing to think about when talking about that is they have a 4th-round pick that got moved much later in the 4th round because of the penalty from the clerical error. So I think that which is the whole thing in itself, but the trading back, that gives you more picks in the second, third round and earlier in the 4th round, because now you got pushed back there. So I think that's kind of something to think about that may have an impact here as well. All right. So there's that. I've talked a lot about this clerical error, so I don't feel like we have to keep going.
I keep forgetting that happened. I'm sure you gave it a lot of pub. I feel like it didn't get a lot of national pub.
I was like, wait, what? And then I had to, we talked about it a lot at the owners' meetings, and John Lynch was very thorough about it, and York was thorough about it. And I covered it on the podcast. So I feel that has been covered. And if you guys missed it, please feel free to Google it, because we are now moving on to JJ McCarthy.
Oof. Okay. All right. So lay it on me. I've been critical. Lay it on me.
Okay. So I will say, I'm sure I know you have. It's okay. I will say, I think this idea of him at number 2 is ridiculous. And I don't even think it's real. I think this is all like a facade to see if they can get, you know, the Vikings to trade up. I think it's a little, it's a lot. I do think that people are seeing on tape, and I understand you watch a lot of film. So, so I obviously always respect your opinion, even if in this case it's wrong, but I still respect you. But I do think there's a lot to like about JJ McCarthy. I think we all know how I feel about him. I talk about it all the time. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to give some counterpoints to the hype before I fully give my Minnesota Vikings pitch.
I think that maybe some of my joking on Twitter is, you know, is easily misperceived, but JJ McCarthy for me is a great mid to late 1st-round pick that is a developmental project. You see on film every single trait that the NFL looks for in a starting quarterback. Big, strong kid. There's a huge emphasis on being able to throw on the run now, and his ability to throw on the run is some of the best amongst these quarterbacks that we've talked about. He can stretch the field. His arm is above NFL average. He also played for a national championship winning team. He also played for a former NFL quarterback who is a former NFL head coach and now a current NFL head coach. So he has this experience, this background, all the traits that you look for. But where I get super wary is that a lot of times he makes really easy things look hard. The best example that I keep bringing up, and it's a very specific one, but I think it really helps illustrate some of his mistakes, is in the Rose Bowl on the first drive, all he has to do on that the given play that he tries to throw the ball out of bounds is just get the ball out of bounds. And instead, because he misfires on this throw, which is supposed to be a simple procedure, it almost gets picked off by Caleb Downs and would have been picked off had his foot not been on the sideline. And that is a huge momentum shifter in a game. Now, I'm not pointing this out to say that he's going to keep doing that in the NFL. I just think it helps illustrate my point here where his decision-making, it doesn't really click. And it just shows me a guy who doesn't really have a ton of snaps underneath his belt. He didn't start as a true freshman. He played a good amount of games, but he did not start full-time as a true freshman. And the two seasons that he was the starter, he wasn't the focal point of the offense. Mm-hmm. There was never an instance that I can point to with him where I know that the game was on the line, the rest of the team was struggling, and that he needed to put the team on his back like Jaden Daniels has done, like Caleb Williams has done, Drake May has done, Bo Nix, Michael Penix. All these guys have instances of doing that. I think that there is a capable world where absolutely J.J. McCarthy ends up being a starting NFL quarterback who's average to above average and does really well. And I think that the Minnesota Vikings, it's the perfect situation. It's the best offense. It's the best front office. There's an emphasis on the run game. And I think that he slides right in and could be very similar usage to the way that he was used at Michigan in Minnesota. But I want to be patient, and I just get a little, not scared, sounds like I'm like really worried, but taking him with the
over JJ McCarthy.
Right. I honestly am. I'm you know, losing my hair over him now. In all seriousness, though, like taking him fourth overall just seems really aggressive. It's going to happen. It's fine. And you don't want to miss out getting your guy. It's just, I don't know if I'd be willing to do that on a project that's going to take a year or more until he can really take over and be as good as he could be.
I have a couple of things to say. First of all,
okay.
When he threw that almost interception that was out of bounds at the Rose Bowl, I kid you not, I almost started crying. I was there, and I literally looked at my...
I don't blame you.
And I looked at him, and I was going to start crying. But it was not an interception, so I did not have to start crying. The throw to me that... this is not him putting the team on his back, but in that same game... The throw that showed me that he could be a really, 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 really good NFL quarterback. And maybe this is just the fan in me. And I totally admit the fact, like someone on Twitter the other day said, a 49ers fan said, I think we could draft the water boy from Michigan and Tracy would say he was elite. And I'm not arguing that that's probably true. So I accept that. And JJ brought a national championship. And so like, I love JJ McCarthy, but the throw to me, that's so JJ McCarthy is when he catches the ball falling backwards and then makes that ridiculous throw to Roman Wilson. And that was a game changer, obviously. And that changed the game. I think he will get picked really high, probably higher than he should. But I think that's just the state of the NFL and quarterbacking and quarterbacks in the draft. And I also think JJ McCarthy in the final game of the season that everybody in the world was watching on a Monday night played better than Michael Penix Jr. And I think that worked a lot in his favor and showed all of the traits that you just talked about. The Vikings also, to me, are a perfect situation for him because he doesn't have to start right away. And that's not a lack of confidence, but I think you have a situation there where they sign Sam Darnold. They start the season with him as the starter and they see, and maybe JJ doesn't even start until week 8, week 9. Maybe he doesn't start till next year, but that's part of why I think it's such a great situation too. I don't think the Commanders, again, I think that's all facade anyway, but I think that's a terrible situation for JJ McCarthy. That is a good way to turn him into Sam Darnold. I hate to say that. Like I really do. I think that's a good way for that to happen to him. So that's why I think the Vikings, even more than the Broncos, I think obviously he would have a great coach in Sean Payton, but the Vikings. And I think if he goes to the Vikings, I think he ends up being a really tremendous, maybe tremendous is too strong a word, but are there too strong of words when it comes to him? He ends up being a really tremendous NFL quarterback down the road.
I also just think with him, and I forget which station I was on when I brought this up. Oh, I was on VSiN when I said this, that it reminds me situationally for him to succeed to what happens with Jordan Love, where he doesn't start for a very long time. And then as soon as he starts to take over, he's terrible. Like he's just really, really bad. And everybody clowns him except for Packers fans. Packers fans are seemingly a little bit more patient. They're waiting to see how it turns out. But the rest of the NFL world is saying, this guy stinks. This was a mistake. This is who he invested in. And then this year, because he was so raw, it all comes together. And he starts to look really good. I think that J.J. McCarthy, for him to succeed, needs to be given the same process and the same level of grace, where don't start him in the first year. He's not like Anthony Richardson, who's just like this cerebral, crazy athlete who's eventually going to figure it out. I want him to get used to just the mechanism of being in the NFL and getting acclimated with everything before I throw him into the fire. And he's probably going to struggle his first year as a starter. And then eventually, that's when things, I think, can really start to snowball into him becoming successful. If he ends up in New England, he's going to get eaten alive by that fan base. And the same thing goes for Washington. The best situation, I think, if he doesn't end up in Minnesota, I'd be a little bit wary of what's going to happen with his career.
By Washington. Oh, you mean the Commanders. I wasn't sure if you meant Seattle for a second. But you mean the Commanders. I don't know why, since we just talked about it. Yeah, I agree. I think that's the best situation. I think that is where he's going to end up. I mean, I think all signs do point to that happening, and it makes the most sense. But that's really what I want from him. So I'm trying to manifest that into the universe.
I think you're putting a lot of positivity out there. It's slightly not convinced to me, but I'm willing to be positive on today's show.
Oh, I appreciate that so much. And he's going to have Justin Jefferson. I mean, he's a good, there's a lot of good there.
Well, assuming he stays, Jefferson's still there. Yeah.
But Kevin O'Connell, I mean, it's a really good situation. And then he's not that far from home. So that there's something to be said for that too, your first year in the NFL. And he's like five. I mean, he's 21, but he's not, you know, and we forget that about all of them. They're all, it's just so crazy when you think about that, that here's this 21-year-old kid. I think about it in college, like all the pressure that was on him and all those kids, that whole Michigan team. I think about all the pressure and everything that happened throughout the season and how they just blocked it out and kept winning. Like, they're kids, all of them. And we forget that. So I have something, one more person I'd like to ask you about, like your feelings on this. And I did not prepare you for this, so I apologize in advance. But I would love your thoughts on Blake Corum in the NFL. And is he an NFL running back? Is he not an NFL running back? Is he a project? I'm just curious. I can't decide. And I know I'm very clouded on this one. So I would love your opinion on Blake.
I tweeted this a while ago, that he has been one of the most difficult, not evaluations, but just like one of the most difficult guys to wrap my head around, because the version of him pre-injury, he was really explosive in short areas. He was one of the shiftiest players that we've seen over the past couple of years at the running back position. And there's a reason why he was so productive until he got hurt. I think that that version of Blake Corum is a starting NFL running back who is a great receiver, a great runner in a team that likes to throw the ball, runs a lot of shotgun. I think he would fit tremendously well with teams that are looking for that style of back. And I think he could be productive. But as we saw this year, the knee injury seemingly took a little bit of his burst away. You know, he's not that same level of explode out of the cut the way that he was before. The vision's still there. He's still extremely intelligent and well-coached, and just understands of how he can pick up and find extra yards. That version of him, though, is a late day three pick who is a rotational back. I'm optimistic. And the reason why I say that he's hard for me to wrap my head around is that modern medicine and these knee injuries, the recovery from them is seemingly a lot easier. And then a lot of times what we'll see, and I kind of think of Saquon's a really good example, where you're injured, the year you come back, you're kind of still figuring it out, and you're not 100%. And then that year following is usually the year that you kind of regain your explosiveness. So I think that there is a world, I'm not a doctor, by the way, if you can't tell, there is a world that Blake Corum this year, as he's finally like fully back to his full power and his full capability, could be a really productive rookie. But I also think it's very capable that he just kind of bounces around and ends up being just a really quality second running back, depending on the team that he goes to.
And I think he's another one, obviously very different circumstances, but he's another one that on the right team, he could do extremely well. Whereas if he's drafted on a different kind of team, you're right, he bounces around. But he also has the potential, I feel like, to be a real steal, because you're right. Sometimes that second year after the injury comes back and it's much better. It might behoove him also to be on a team where he is not drafted. And it doesn't, I don't think he will be, but maybe it will behoove him as he comes back from the injury He's not drafted to be the starting running back. He is drafted to be number two or number three and gets a fair amount of playing time. I mean, there are people who've said they feel like he could be good, you know, in a 49ers offense. They should not draft him in round three because their round three running back history is horrific. And I want that for Blake. But I think that it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I can't quite wrap my head around it either, to be honest with you. I look at Zach Zinter, the offensive lineman, who I think will end up being a steal for someone because he got hurt. And he got hurt apparently in the best way you could get hurt. He's recovering well, but it will make him get drafted later, and he could end up being a tremendous steal for a team. We've talked about other Michigan players that I think are kind of a slam dunk. Blake will be an interesting one to watch for sure.
Yeah, Zinter too, you bring that up, could kind of be like Trey Smith in a way where he goes super late, completely different reason, He wasn't hurt. It was all like a heart condition that they were worried about. And he goes late and then just ends up being like a really good starting guard for the Kansas City Chiefs. I really think that he is pre-injury. I would have argued he's the highest floor guard in this class, but him not being able to test and some of these other guys getting to test and show off during these drills is, you know, really helped their case. I think though, that just to finish out with Blake Corum, I think he'd be like perfect either in Buffalo or in New York, because like I look at what they did with Devin Singletary for the brief period of time. Like there's some similarities in size profile that I think that the argument could be made for there. And Devin Singletary is now a New York Giant. So maybe that's the guy that you pair. Good receiver, good vision, a lot of shotgun, and can get into the mix pretty early.
Well, I would agree with that. I would agree. And he can handle the cold weather. So he's got that.
Exactly.
So there you go. Well, Joe, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. Please let everyone know where they can find you.
Appreciate you having me on, Tracy. This was great to catch up, talk a little bit of draft. At Joe DeLeon on Twitter, you can catch my podcast, The First Team, or Rufino and Joe Show, First Team NFL Draft Discussions, on any podcast platform you can find, and then also on YouTube with me and my co-host, Brian Roberts.
You guys can catch me on Twitter at TracyFGSN, on Instagram at Tracy Sandler. If you guys like what you heard, and I don't think there's any reason you wouldn't, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a super positive review. We are brought to you by Bet Online, and I think those are all my announcements for today. I will talk to everybody later this week. Bye, all.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.